This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And I'm really happy that you came to the show, and I always appreciate, you know, your patronage of the Energy Stoners Cafe. So I hope you have your cup of coffee or an adult beverage prepared so you can sit back and relax to another fantastic guest. Now, this week, I have a guest that I've known her a little bit with different hats, and she's quite the creative individual. She's, I'd say, an all-around artist, and I know her originally as a visual artist and an outstanding visual artist. I knew at that time that she was also an actor. And now she's actually involved in a film production in the UK. And I don't know when she left. How did she slip through my fingers? Her name is Lee Trifari. I love her name. I love her. I love her work. And she's going to be talking to us about a very pertinent project that she's working on. And she happens to be doing it in the UK, although she is from the United States, New York metropolitan area. So Lee, I haven't seen you in a few years. And next thing you know, you left town. How did this happen? When did it happen?
Basically, I fell in love.
Oh, that.
Actually, I fell in love at a very early age with England. My father had a pen pal from the UK, and they kept in touch like during college and stuff like that. And when I was about 6 years old, he and his wife came to visit my parents and our family. And I thought, you know, these people talk really, really weird, but like, I'd love to see where they live someday. And fast forward to my college years, and a college choir that I was singing with actually went on tour to England. We did, we were part of the Shrewsbury International Music Festival, and we toured like England, Scotland, and Wales. And I was there for a month, and I didn't want to come home. I was like, and I met the pen pal. The pen pal came to hear us sing and took me out to dinner and everything. So I had that connection there. And then, you know, I was like, I had in the back of my brain that I really wanted to live abroad someday. And in 2016, I actually went back to Europe. I was singing with a choir, again, a different choir, and we toured Germany. And I loved Germany. I was like, oh my gosh, I would love to live there because my heritage is actually like half Irish, half German. So I really had it in my head that Germany was like going to be the place. And then in 2017, I met my husband. And it's like, okay, England it is.
England it is, yes.
Yeah. He's actually a conservation architect, and he looks after a lot of old buildings, which England has plenty of. And so when it came to trying to decide where we were going to live, I'm like, no, I'm an actor. I can go anywhere. So England it was.
And so you live over there now. Do you have dual citizenship? I'm just curious.
I am living over here, yep. I made the leap.
Oh, you made the leap.
I made the leap. I packed everything up in boxes and I made the leap.
And you went across the pond.
Across the pond, yes.
How do you like it over there? How is it for you as an artist over there?
You know, it's really wonderful to me because, first of all, I'm living like in the land of Shakespeare and I'm living in the land of theater, and I'm meeting a lot of really amazing people like everywhere I go. London, I had visited London, you know, back when I was in college, and I was really intimidated by it at the time. But now, like compared to New York City, it's like London is just so quaint. And I love London.
And London seems to love you, too. No, it sounds like it. You know, you sound great.
Yeah.
You sound very happy, and you sound brand new. Yeah, that's the only way I can describe it. You sound brand new. Tell me about this project where you're actually involved in the production of this screenplay.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I literally came across this project through a post on Facebook. I mean, as soon as I got to the UK, of course, the first thing you do is I sign up for groups and network and try to find, you know, other actors and things like that. And one of the groups that I belonged to had this post, and I was like, you know, first of all, the concept really appealed to me, you know, because of the fact that it was like at 1700s, it was a period drama. It involved really strong female characters. And like as an actress, I'm always attracted to projects like that. I want to make projects that are socially relevant and also like, you know, definitely female centered.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up Jane Sanger, the director. I looked at her website, and I saw that she'd won the London Independent Film Festival Award for Best Female Director in 2017, like literally like weeks before I came here. And I'm like, I have to meet this woman. See this, I'm like the kind of person I really, and of course I approached her at first as an actress because I would just love to be able to do a period drama. You know, she got talking to me and she said, well, you know, I noticed from your independent movie database profile that you actually produced a movie. And I'm like, well, yeah, I did. And actually I did. In 2014, I helped a friend of mine from New York produce one of his first short films. And I was like an associate producer on that. And, you know, basically when you're a producer on a project like that, you're the one who's running for coffee, you're taking care of the help, you're trying to, you know, negotiate hotel rates for the guests, you're trying to work out the catering.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically a gopher. And I loved it. It was like my first foray into film producing. And I was like, oh, you know, I'd love to do this again. And so when she said to me, well, how about coming on board for the series as an associate producer? I'm like, I'd love it.
Wow. That's what it takes, you know. I admire the fact that you just like stepped right up.
Yeah, well, I get excited by that. Actually, one thing I found out when I was producing for my friend's movie, I found out that I really liked like talking on the phone to strangers. which doesn't sound so good, right, nowadays. But the thing is that, you know, it's all about networking and talking. And, you know, once I get really passionate about something, it's like I will just talk to everybody about it. So I said, why not put that to use? And here I am.
I have to say, Lee, I'm very impressed with you because I know a couple of things about you that people might be surprised about, or maybe, and I don't think I'm the only one that doesn't know these things. When I remember working with you in the visual arts in a retail situation where I was teaching there, well, actually, you had been trained by my favorite framer who went out of business. I'm very disappointed, Ian Wint.
Yes.
And he was a patron, and he also was an advocate for artists.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was.
Yeah, he would exhibit our work and frame our work. He had a little gallery in the store.
I actually had an exhibit at his store one time.
Yes, so did I, you know.
Yep.
And he's very engaging that way. And you're one of his proteges. You're one of the chosen few that learned professional picture framing. And so you actually get your hands right into it. And I was always impressed by that. And also your work as a painter, I found extraordinary.
Oh, thank you.
But now it's like, and as you're acting, I'd seen you on some bit parts on some TV shows. I'd seen a few things. I said, wow, she's really in there. She's working it. And now you're producing in the UK. So you've come a long way.
It sure has been. It's been a wild ride, isn't it? For sure.
Yeah, yeah. And you sound like you still feel young.
It does keep me young.
That's a good thing. We like that.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the story, because the story, even though it's a period piece, I think I understand that it takes place in the UK, but yet it's somewhat multicultural in a sense. Tell us about that.
Sure thing. The Night Riders is actually set in the early 1700s. This is during the early days of King George I, who was known as the German King. He was actually a first cousin of Queen Anne, who was a Protestant queen. And there was this thing called the Act of Settlement in 1701, which basically outlawed Catholicism in England. And so Anne had no husband, she had no children, so King George was actually her first cousin. So they inscripted him to be their new king. So he took the throne in 1714. Now, the story of the Knight Riders is actually a story about the first British Coast Guard, because at the time, there were like these guys on horseback who rode up and down the coast of England and basically warded off villages to warn them of possible invaders. If that sounds kind of slightly familiar,
it does.
It's because Paul Revere was a Knight Rider.
Yes, he was. I do remember that part of history, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So the Knight Riders basically refers to the English Coast Guard. It's also a time where King George was really concerned about maintaining trade deals with the Middle East, because they got a lot of really, you know, the spices and all kinds of wonderful things from the Middle East. And of course, the Middle East was home to the Barbary Pirates. So the Barbary Pirates were commonly trying to invade England and also make off with women because they needed slaves.
Women? So the women were the slaves?
Yes, yes. They had a pensions for white red-haired women in particular. So the story, you know, besides being England and Morocco, also covers a period of English history which dealt with the white slave trade, which is something that England probably doesn't talk about much, but it's part of their history.
Yes.
And also what they did too at that time is if you were a prisoner, especially a female prisoner, they would ship you off to places like Morocco, just ship you off to these places where you could just be forgotten.
What happened in Morocco once they got there? Do you know? Or is it written anywhere?
If the Sultan liked them, he would make them part of his harem. He would take them and make them part of his collection. In particular, in this story, we have one of the main characters is named Elizabeth Goodfellows, and she's the daughter of a land baron. And she basically does get captured, and she's taken to Morocco. And she learns very quickly that if she wants to stay alive, she has to get in the Sultan's favor. And so she basically finds out a way to work the system, shall we say, and then also try to find a way to buy herself back to England. So there's a lot of mystery and intrigue and negotiation there to try to see if she's actually going to be able to make that feat and get back home. And so that's one of the characters.
Were there any people of color in the scripted in this screenplay?
Yes, actually there is. One of the five characters, there's actually five, Elizabeth, Esther, who's like the local witch, Lady Mary Goodfellows, who's Elizabeth's mother, and then they have Lady Marguerite Dean, who's a wife of another land baron named William Dean, and then we have Daisy Fernandez, who is the, shall we say, mixed race mistress of Sir William.
Okay, so how does she get the name Fernandez?
That might be a bit of artistic license. Because we know she might have been of Spanish heritage at one point.
And you think, when you think in terms of Morocco, is very people there have a little more color. They have more melanin in Morocco than they have in England. I'll say it like that.
Yes.
So it sounds like it's very relevant to things that are going on right now.
It is because it deals with history. It deals with, if you make it really, really relevant, it deals with, like, selective history, you know, because there's so much going on in the world these days, you know, that, you know, tearing down of statues and burning books and everything like that. And, I think it's really courageous that we're taking on a topic that, you know, at least here in England, people probably wouldn't want to talk about, but it definitely is relevant. And the thing is, too, is that what's really interesting to me is that In dealing with the Barbary Pirates, it was actually the Americans who actually signed a deal with the pirates and freed the slaves.
Really?
And this took place in 1815. So, you know, even before we had our own Civil War, we were over in England solving their slavery issue.
Right. It sounds like it was more like human trafficking than actual slavery.
Yeah, by today's terms, I think it definitely would be more in terms of human trafficking. Yeah.
Because I'm wondering how these women were really treated.
I would wonder that too. I know that if you were in the Sultan's court, you probably were doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
If you were just, you know, auctioned off to somebody, who knows?
Yeah.
You might have been, you could have been a prostitute or a concubine or, you know, or servant.
So you have to hope for the best, I imagine.
I would think so, yeah.
Because I can only imagine. Because I just, you know, I've never experienced, well, I'm not going to say never. Never say never, because you never know what will happen ultimately. What stage is the film in at this point? Is it in this a reading stage, or are you actually shooting footage?
Actually, it is a TV series. And what we're doing right now, we're holding a crowdfunder to raise money to create a teaser, which is basically a little short clip that we can use along with our visual package to present to networks. We're actually looking for distribution. And this would be with either Hulu or Stars or BBC3. There are some platforms that we think would be a better fit, but basically we're going to take this and shop it around. And then once we get the teaser done and find a market, then we'll go ahead and shoot the pilot. We already have 8 episodes ready to go.
Good. That sounds like you have things, your ducks in a row. So how many people are involved in your production?
Well, right now, it's just myself and the other producers. We have 7 other associate producers, and then we have the director and the cinematographer, and then we just did the casting for Elizabeth and John Goodfellows. These are our 2 lovebirds in the series, and so we had a casting for them, which was really fun. I couldn't do the casting because I was in a rehearsal for myself, but basically we had 3 girls and 3 guys. And we brought them out, and they had to show us their horseback riding skills because we're going to need a lot of horses for this. And we definitely wanted actors who definitely know how to ride. So they basically came out to, I guess it was in Kent where they were doing, on the other side of the country where they were doing the auditions. And they had to ride and actually ride on camera and show us like how they can handle a horse. You know, because once you get the wigs and the costume on, like, it's going to be kind of complicated.
A little cumbersome, I like to say, right?
Yeah. And then the thing is, too, is like part of the reason we're doing the crowdfunder is that even though we have backers already lined up, horses are expensive.
And the people that you have to hire with the horse, they don't ride themselves, you know, just say whatever.
Nope. They don't.
You know? How has the current pandemic affected the production, if at all? From where I sit, I see that you kind of took yourself out of a certain realm by moving across the pond, so to speak.
Oh, no.
Not really?
Well, no. I mean, the COVID pandemic has really hit us hard, too. I mean, Everything shut down back in March. Uh-huh. And actually, the arts are the last sector to really be opening back up. Other businesses were opening up in July, but like our theaters are just beginning to open back up with social distancing guidelines and other protective measures. We have been doing a lot. I guess a lot of the major BBC series are back shooting again. A couple are still putting things off until 2021. I don't know if you had a chance to see Killing Eve yet.
No.
Yeah, it's a really great drama, and it has from Grey's Anatomy, Sandra Oh.
Oh, okay.
Sandra Oh is this really great girl from Manchester named Jodie Cromer, and it's a fabulous, fabulous drama, and it's in their 3rd season now, I think, and they put a production till next year. So everything's kind of piecemeal right now. We don't really know. I mean, the guidelines are so vague, and there just seems to be so much emphasis on the social distancing and the masks and the virus and the vaccine and everything. So, you know, things are getting back to work, but very, very slowly. As far as we're going, I mean, we haven't had it impact us yet, but I recently had to do some COVID training for myself, just for my own interest and curiosity, but also to see what areas it might affect us when we go forward with the production, because we're looking to start producing this next year as well.
Oh, so that's really kind of soon, I would say.
It is. It's kind of scary, too.
You know, we're rounding the corner and we're heading to the 4th quarter of the year. And that's when people make an assessment of the whole year in the 4th quarter.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious also, because you did make a move in terms of where you actually reside, and it sounds like your swagger has changed a little bit, and it helps to be in love. You know, it's sort of a way to propel things as I recall,
yes. Oh, yes.
I think it's outstanding what you're doing. So what are your plans? I know what your plans are for the future with this production, but what is your ultimate plan? Because I see that you've made a major, major career shift from where I sit on the outside of you.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of like visual arts and stuff like that, I'll never, ever lose that visual art connection. I have all my paintings here with me. Flatiron Gallery in Peekskill still has a couple of my paintings, and she actually sold a couple the other day. And I was like, oh, that's nice.
That's a nice thing.
That's a nice thing. It was a little surprise. Give a little shout out to Wendy at the Flatiron.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Wendy
but,
Garber. Yes.
Anyway, my plan, basically, I mean, like I said, I've always wanted to live abroad, but the appeal of being here is that the international market just seems so much more closer to me. So, you know, my plan is to basically just to get involved with the independent movie circuit and start, like, doing some acting,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well as some producing. But my primary goal is to just do some acting mm-hmm. and really get some international films going and possibly return back to Hollywood at some point.
Oh, really? What does your husband think about Hollywood? Does he want to do that? Things are a little hot over there these days.
Things are a little hot over there right now. And he's, you know, I mean, being an architect, of course, he told me when we first got married, you know, I don't know anything about your business, you know, but I'm going to learn. I'm like, okay. and of course, I'm going to learn about architecture. So, you know, the thing is that he, I think Hollywood might be a few years down the pike. But, you know, the thing is that as long as I'm working and working with like-minded people and doing projects that I'm excited about, Hollywood will still be there whenever I get there. So
I might move a little east because I understand there's a lot of film production being done in Atlanta, Georgia has become like a mecca for that.
Yeah, but not only that, but like Netflix has just bought a huge chunk of property in London. So there's going to be a lot more BBC US collaborations going on, which I'm very excited about.
Well, I hope so because I love BBC. I'm a PBS kind of person. And the only place you can really find BBC is on a PBS.
Oh, and please. Monty Python. I grew up on Monty Python and
right.
Benny Hill.
There you go, Benny Hill. He's so funny. I loved his little Thanksgiving episode was the best with Benny Hill. So hilarious.
I think that might have cinched the deal for me with my husband because he made me watch Benny Hill when I first got here.
You've never seen him? Oh my gosh, it's hilarious.
Oh no, I have. But the thing is, I think he was surprised and delighted that I actually laughed at it and, you know, and enjoyed it.
No, he's like the fun kind of crazy funny. It's a bit of slapstick when he takes the whole Thanksgiving turkey and wears it on his head. I love that.
Yep.
Puts his head right yep. through the opening. And it just cracks me up every single time. It's funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like this play has some kind of social relevance to it. It must be means something to you, I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, this project like delves into an overlooked chapter in British history. No matter how you look at it, any kind of slavery or human trafficking is just abominable and it needs to be stopped.
Yes.
You know, but the thing is that we can't just erase it and pretend it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's going on nowadays is that there's this premise that, you know, we should find ways to talk. We should talk about it, heal it, move on and stuff like that. And some people are just like, no, I don't want to talk about it. And I don't want to heal because, you know, this thing was done and, you know, we have to destroy it, you know, to make it go away. And I just think that like good art can help that process, that you can do things that invite conversation and discourse, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
So this series, even though it is fictional, it's based on actual historical accounts. And I just think history is so important, you know, but the same token, it's important to say that was then, this is now, you know, what have we learned kind of thing.
Yeah. What have we learned?
I love things that have some social relevance, you know, that say, okay, you know, this happened, you know, let's see if we can make it better the next time.
Sometimes it's hard to face the reality of who we really are, especially when you talk about slavery.
Well, you know, humanity's done some pretty ugly things. You know, but we've also done some really beautiful things too.
We have.
So,
Yeah. Now, do you find that when you're in the UK, like there are a lot of other European countries or the size of the United States, the individual states here, do you find it's easy to travel around Europe? Because you can go, say, oh, let me take a trip to Paris today and then take a day trip to Paris.
Well, it's so funny you should say that because, as I mentioned, I came to the UK in college with a choir. I went to Berlin with a choir, and as soon as I got here, I had to find another group to sing with because I like singing more as a hobby and for the social aspects of it. And so I actually found a choir. We sing in Cambridge, we're called Cambridge Voices. And one of the draws that got me into the group was that they go to Paris every year.
Oh. Okay.
So I actually got to go to Paris last year, and I literally just hopped on a train and went through the tunnel, through the English Channel, and popped out in Paris, and it was magical. 2 hours to Paris from London. It's like, okay, I could do that. And then I was talking to somebody else. It's like, well, we could go to Amsterdam, because Amsterdam's only 3.5 hours.
Wow.
Okay, that's a short trip. I actually had planned on buying tickets and going to Cannes. I got clearance to go to Cannes as an industry professional, and then lo and behold, COVID hit, so I couldn't do that. But Cannes.
Oh, wow.
It's definitely on my to-do list for next year.
Maybe I'll meet you there. I'll take a date.
Well, I have a whole book on how to navigate. It's called The Virgin's Guide to Cannes.
The Virgin's? Oh, that would be me.
The Festival Virgin's Guide to Cannes. Festival Virgin's Guide to Cannes.
I want to read that one.
It's a really good book. It covers everything you need to know about getting there and doing stuff. And yeah, I'm learning a lot from reading it because now that I have more time to read it, I can actually spend some time.
That's so cool. And so when do you actually feel that this film will be released? Like, when does this actual production begin?
Well, like I said, we're going to start shooting in 2021. And then, of course, it will depend on who picks us up as far as distribution. Like I said, we're going to pitch it to all the major cable outlets. Some might be a better fit than others, but like right now we're looking at Hulu and Stars because they have a lot of similar programs. I forget who carries Outlander, but Outlander is kind of a similar feel to us. And also The Great, I think that sounds at Stars. And then, of course, you have The Crown, which is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think Harlots with Leslie Mandel, I think that's on HBO. I'm not sure. I'd look that up. But anyway, some platforms are just a better draw for period dramas right now. So we're going to target those first, but ultimately it's going to come up to whoever, you know, is interested in doing the series and developing it as a concept. I think we're aiming on 2021.
Okay.
It's a process, and it takes a village and money and all that other stuff. So, you know, hopefully we'll find somebody soon and we can get it going.
Okay, so tell me, how can someone contact you and the production in order to make a donation?
Well, the easiest way to find me is on Facebook, Lee Trafari. And I'm on Twitter and Insta as L.A. Trafari. Knight Riders has a page on Facebook as well. It's / Knight Riders TV. They have to put the S in, otherwise you get a website for the guy with the talking black Camaro.
Oh, so that guy. What's his name?
So it has to be Knight Riders TV with the S.
Okay, Knight Riders TV.
And then if you want to find out more about the project, you can go to luminofilms.co.uk. Yeah, Lumino Films, that's actually Jane Sanger's maiden name.
Okay.
If you go to Lumino Films Official on Twitter and Instagram, they can get in touch that way. And if anybody is interested in the Indiegogo campaign, we have links for that posted on Facebook and Insta as well.
Indiegogo is I think, become very popular.
I think so. I mean, I can give you the link for the Indiegogo, too, though it's been a little troublesome. We just got started 2 days ago. We've had to alter the links a little bit, but I can give you the link because it's actually igg.me/@@ Knight Riders TV with the S / X #
Okay, that's big.
It's a little complicated, not very romantic.
It's a little cumbersome, but I imagine it's on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
So people can actually donate to this. I like the fact that it's a project that's being really actually spearheaded and run by women. And women have made some strides in the film industry when before it was almost impossible.
Yes. Yes. I've been watching, I mean, with all my newfound downtime, I've actually been watching a lot of really great movies on Netflix, and I've been stunned at like some really great movies that I've been seeing in there by female directors, and I'm like, yes!
Yeah, yeah.
This is very exciting. I think it's a really great time to be involved in independent television and film, because we can write our own material, and we can actually get these things done. And with platforms like Indiegogo and GoFundMe, I mean, it takes it just a little bit. It's like everybody you knew on Facebook gave you $5. I mean, what could you do with that? You know, it's really a great concept.
It is a good concept, and you kind of want to make enough to actually be able to give some to someone else if you can.
Yep.
I think it's wonderful what you're doing. So you actually made the plunge, and so you live over there now.
I do.
But it's amazing. With technology, I can talk to you anyway. I think it's a beautiful thing.
It is a great thing. It's a great thing. And actually, during lockdown, it became even more of a great thing.
How was the lockdown in the UK? How was that? I know how it was here.
Well, we actually live in southeast England, in West Norfolk. We're about 90 miles northeast of London, and it's very rural, like Nebraska rural. Like, it's very flat, lots of farmland. It's an area called the Fens, and it's known for basically producing most of our food supply. It's very, 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 you know, lots of sheep and cows and chickens and these gigantic farm tractors that look like transformers. And it's a little isolated.
I can imagine.
You know, so lockdown was a little tough because, like, as you know, I'm a very social person.
You're a very social person, and you're from the New York metropolitan area, which is not rural, even in the suburbs.
And I mean, I can walk to town here. It's about 3 miles away. But it took me a while to crack that nut, too, because it's just like, you know, over here, people tend to, you know, go about their business. And I mean, you know, it's just like the first few months of lockdown were just like, I didn't even want to go on the computer. I was just like, no, I'm not going to sit on the computer for 8 hours a day, and I'm not going to do online classes, and I'm not going to do Zoom meetings, and I'm not going to do any of this stuff. You know, I got to find something else to do with my time. So I really threw myself into my acting, and I started working on monologues and scripts and writing and singing, and it just anything to stay away from the computer. Now, like 5-6 months later, I'm doing the Zoom meetings, I'm talking on the phone, I'm doing all these things. And it's like, it's not so bad. You know, my friends in London and I still keep in touch. But we're looking forward to the time where we can actually get together and meet and have coffee again.
That would be nice. That would
be nice. Yeah, yeah. I have to say, the first few months were like pretty brutal because I was just like, what am I going to do today? What am I going to, you know, and I'm one of those people, like, I have to get dressed up. I can't, like, just stay in my sweats all day. I actually have to get dressed up and, like, you know, psychologically, I have to, you know, psych myself up for that. So
that is one of the methods I was using, because I'll say the pause was okay. I didn't mind pausing. I liked the quiet. I liked the fresh air, you know, and I liked the fact that I could regroup and find out who the heck am I. But I want to have you on again, Lee, because as the production progresses, it's one of those things I don't often get to talk to somebody at the very beginning of a production. And now that I have, I really am interested in kind of following it. And I think my audience would be interested in it, too. I have to congratulate you for having the guts to make the plunge and actually cross the pond and start a new life, which is a continuation of the life that you had.
Well, you know, either I'm brave or crazy or one of the two.
I think it's a little of all of that and in love.
I think so, yeah.
And being in love makes everything easier, makes you feel braver. When you're in love, I know when I'm in love, I feel more brave about doing things.
Well, you know, like I said, my husband doesn't understand the business, but he supports me all the way. And that means the world, you know, to know that he's got my back, like, all the time.
He obviously sees that you're very, very special. So I'm going to thank you again for coming on. This is great.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And if the audience doesn't know, I'm just going to say that it's like 8 o'clock in New York and it's 1 o'clock in the morning where you are. And
it is.
And I thank you so much for staying up for this. That's excellent.
Oh, it's okay, because we stay up to like at least midnight anyway, so I'm not doing so bad here.
Consider that you have been productive.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And you can tell Jane Sanger I'm looking forward to seeing the final production. And even in the middle, I always like to kind of see what the heck's going on. I'm very curious about it. And I really appreciate this, Lee, because I feel like I know you for who you are as an artist. You're getting involved in this film production, but I know you as a visual artist. And I tell the audience that Lee Trifari is an excellent actress. She's a working actor. And she also is an outstanding painter, an outstanding visual artist. So it's really cool to be an artist, I've decided during this pause. I didn't realize how cool it was until I had to pause and couldn't do anything else but what I do. So
exactly. Exactly. When you get up in the morning and you realize you're facing your art like every single day, it's like, okay, here we are. What are we going to do?
Yeah, here we are again. Easy commute. Go from the bed to the studio. Done. Boom.
Boom. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And I'm really very proud to know another female, another woman that is doing something fantastic. And everybody should be proud. Everybody should be proud of you. Through all this pandemic, you have an up attitude and a forward way of thinking, and I appreciate that. It gives everybody a little bit of hope, you know, that this thing is going to be okay in the long term.
I hope so.
I believe so. I believe in the long term it'll be okay. And I really appreciate you taking the time out and breaking your sleep to talk to me. Let's make a point of talking again in the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. I'll definitely keep in touch and let you know. You're on my speed dial now, Tony.
Yeah, likewise.
I found you. I'm not going to let you go that easily.
Uh-oh, but likewise, you know. Once I become a loyalist, you can't get rid of me. That's me. But I really appreciate you taking the time out.
My pleasure.
I think it'll be an inspiration to people that are kind of, there's some people still trying to figure out what the heck to do. And to see that you've done what you did and reinvented yourself with COVID. What more can I say? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'll say goodnight for now, and I'll say good morning to you, Lee. And,
okay.
And I'll say to the audience, thank you again for coming to listen to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I have aspirations of having an actual Energy Stoners Cafe in Amsterdam someday. But for now, we're doing it this way. It's virtual. And so I hope everybody had a good glass of wine, a good cup of coffee, or a good cup of tea. And I'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.